Listener, this is Will. If you're hearing this, it means that something has happened which I feared for a long time. This might be the last time you ever hear my voice, and I know some of you are celebrating at that. But just know that I loved every single one of you the same. You all mean so much more to me, and because I'm gone, just know that Sean and Jason don't give a shit about you. They literally said, I said to both of them, I said, do you guys know how much our listener means? And they said, I don't give two fucks about our listener. Jason said that as he slammed the door on his European car. Anyway, I love you and welcome to an all new Smart List.
Smart.
We had our family reunion. I just got in. Okay, let's move on.
Who's ready with their coffee chat? Let's hear it. How was it?
Any fights? I just got back.
Did anybody drink into a fight?
No. Nobody fought. It was great. It was fantastic. It was lovely.
Jay, you didn't call. I called in. I got to say hi. I got to meet some of the fam. I got to meet his niece and her boyfriend.
What do you mean you called in? I don't understand.
FaceTime.
I FaceTime with Sean. We keep in touch and say hello.
Yeah,
this is
you
how
really
normal
do.
Human
we
beings.
We talk about this sometimes. What is it? Is it like a nightly thing? I've just been sort of teasing, but now I'm in my fifis about it. You guys talk every night?
No.
Who you do with Josh? Fucking Josh Shotland gets you on a FaceTime every goddamn day.
Who's Josh?
Just this guy who likes to talk on this FaceTime with Will on his couch without his top on.
That's true.
Yeah, and he frames himself just below the tees.
That's true.
Just below the tees.
Yeah, it's weird. Is he still have plastic on his couch?
Mm-hmm. No.
Just when he talks to you.
Yeah, he only takes a break when the food delivery comes. He's always like, 1 second.
So how often are you guys FaceTiming?
A couple times a week, maybe.
Higher.
Go higher.
Higher while you lie to me. Is it every other night?
No. No.
So another lie. You go super low or super high.
No,
they're lying.
No.
Lying.
No.
So, but this is fun for you guys. You guys stay in contact because you're best friends and you like to keep up on each other's lives and call into reunions and stuff like that. You know, I'm fucking sitting here doing nothing but...
Okay, now what we're going to do is we're going to take the clip out of you for the last 10 seconds complaining about it. We're going to take your facial expression and your tone, and then we're going to ask you, would you call that guy?
Yeah, it's a great point. Well, maybe just not FaceTime me, so you don't have to see the heavy brow.
I FaceTime with you. The last time I FaceTime with you last week, and you were on. Do we want to get into this? You were on a floaty.
Oh yeah, let's do some pool time.
Yeah,
you know I've remembered I have a pool.
Yeah,
you know, like I can enjoy.
Sean, he was floating.
No. How about this? 2 weeks ago, when I went to visit him, he was on a floaty in the pool at his house.
Yeah.
Ordering sushi from the pool.
Yeah. I like to live the good life every couple of days, you know?
Way to go, JB. We're trying to get people, dissuade people from the opinion that
we're coastal
Hollywood
elites.
Types are a bunch of dicks, total douchebags. And you just
wait, no, this is a public pool. Down at the Y. This is a public pool.
But in Jason's defense, he drove to pick up the sushi.
No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Look at you, growth.
I wanted to put it in my face quicker than Uber could bring me.
Where did you, you didn't go to the place in Beverly Glen, did you?
No. This was a Sugarfish special.
Yummy. Oh, okay. I love that place.
They make a nice box down there.
They do.
You know?
I do.
Is it me or does sushi delivery now, they've kind of upped things?
Yeah, it used to be it didn't travel well.
Right, slapdash thing with a sweaty, you know, plastic see-through box.
Yeah.
Now it's a paper thing that's got nice printing and graphics.
Yeah, it's got little sections on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to the guest.
JB, before you get to your guest, I know you're anxious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's remind our listener for our thing afterwards to stick around and listen to, right, Sean, to our
new... Yes, it's called Goalless. It's a new show from Smartless Media, our little podcast company, and I'm going to tell you all about it at the end of the episode, so please stick around.
Yeah.
All right, tighten up, guest. Here we go. Guys, I don't know if you like acting talent. A lot of people do. For some reason, the three of us seem allergic to it being anywhere near our work. But this guy has got a lot of it. Oh, and if we're nice to him, maybe he'll share some. He could also lend us a few of his numerous nominations and wins for his work, which he's been, which he's received well-deserved recognition for from all over the world. Sean, you're going to want to discuss with him the whimsy and the wonder of projects such as The Chronicles of Narnia, X-Men, Children of Dune. While Will, you'll be more interested in the subjects covered in titles such as Shameless, Wanted, Filth, and ultimately Atonement. He's a Scottish treasure, a Celtic FC diehard, and a recovering video game addict. Please show some compassion and hospitality to the one and only James McAvoy.
Oh,
James.
My God.
Hey, guys. What's going on? How you doing?
James.
Look at him.
Now, I'm a massive, massive fan.
Yeah. Pump the brakes. We're going to get to X-Men and things like that.
Split is one of my favorite movies. One of the best performances I've ever seen anybody ever. Oh. Yeah.
Dude, thank you so much.
You played like 75 characters in that.
Let's start with high, okay? Let's just start with high.
So
how are you? Nice to meet you.
I've always wanted to meet you.
Don't choke
I'm so
the
excited.
Puppy, Sean.
Yeah.
Sorry.
God.
Hey,
James.
Will, do you have anything you'd like to say about Celtic FC, or do they mess around with your Liverpool fans?
No, they don't, because they play in a different league. First of all,
don't be shitty.
So if I were a Rangers fan, then we'd have more of an issue. But I will say one of my favorite players plays for Liverpool, who happens to be a Scot, Andy Robertson, who I just adore.
Sure.
He's amazing. And also he's one of the greatest Liverpool players of all time, Kenny Dalglish, not to mention Graeme Souness. But Kenny Dalglish was also a massive, massive, icon for Celtic as well.
So Kenny Dalglish, I had the pleasure last year. I bored these guys when I went on my various trips over to Liverpool, and I got to sit with Kenny Dalglish. I got to sit with him.
Well,
he
so
first
real.
Of all, the last game I went to, when I went to Jurgen's second last game, he was behind me with his wife. JB, you watch your manners. You're talking about Sir Kenny
I'm just
Dalglish.
Working on fake snoring. That's
that sounds so real.
You're about to make millions of enemies right now.
No, listen,
and,
I love
and
this
show
guy.
Some fucking respect to Sir Kenny Dalglish. The stand opposite says the Sir Kenneth Dalglish stand at Liverpool, and he's sitting there looking at his own stand. He's a fucking icon, dude.
Yeah, I know. He's brilliant. He's really, really amazing. He's famously dour, but I was lucky enough to be managed by him at a charity football event once. And I spent three or four days with him during this time.
Sean was managed by a dog leash at one point in your career. Right, Sean?
Yeah, just a couple tugs and I'm yours.
I love an easy lay.
Oh God, James!
Good night,
I'm so
everybody.
Sorry,
James. Thanks for joining us. I'm gonna
it's
leave.
Been great,
on the
guys. Thanks very much. This has been like the real middle point of my career. Thank you.
Fucking fuck.
Does anybody call you Jim or Jimmy?
Yeah. I don't get Jim too much. There's one guy who brilliantly is also not brilliantly. He is Scottish, but he rather brilliantly calls me. He's called Jockey, and he calls me Jockey. And a couple of mates call me Jimmy Floyd.
Where does Jockey come from?
I don't know where Jockey comes from. Jock is also rhyming slang for Scottish person because it's sweaty sock jock.
Really?
Go back to sweaty sock.
If you're a sweaty sock in England, if you're like a Cockney and you're referring to Scottish people, you say sweaty sock because it rhymes with jock. So, but he was called Jockey, and for some reason he would call me Jockey, but then most of my mates would call me Jimmy Floyd.
How about that?
Sure, and where does that come from? Floyd come from?
Two of my favorite football players, one of them was Henrik Larsson. His name didn't become anything to do with mine. The other one was Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, and so they used to call me Jimmy, and then they started calling me Jimmy Floyd. And then they just dropped the Jimmy, and most of them just call me Floyd. And then I've got one mate who's from Newcastle who calls me Jimmy Flow.
Jimmy Flow.
Jimmy Flow. How's
Nobody
it going,
calls
mate?
Me shit. How come I don't have a nickname, do I? You guys?
Listen, by the end of this podcast, we're going to have a nickname.
Crank
for you.
Uncle Grumps.
Uncle Hansy.
Yeah,
Uncle Hansy.
Bitch slap.
Wait, James. I have a feeling by the end of this interview, we're gonna have nicknames for each other. I feel like we've got a real quick connection right here. Not with the other guys.
No,
just me.
Yeah.
James McAvoy, what beverage are you enjoying right now? Because it's got a lot of ice in it, which I enjoy.
It's soda water and lime right now. I did have a Cosmo right before we started this.
No, you did not. Did you? Really?
Yeah, Cosmo. I did. I had a Cosmo.
I love that. Where are you right now?
I'm in my basement.
But
I
where?
Ran back here. In North London.
In North London.
Fantastic.
Wow,
fantastic.
It looks fancy.
I want to live in North London.
I know. Look at him. He's just having a little Cosmo.
He's got a nice painted wall behind him with a good iron window.
Like a Hawaiian shirt on.
Look at this.
This is my basement. This is my little man cave. I don't like that term, but it is like my little place that I get to come and be. And I've got a little sort of wanker gym over there. And I've got a TV in front of me.
Gym. We're going to let you rephrase that. Gym.
It's where I get stronger as a wanker. I really work on my technique. I like try and make it harder for myself. Sometimes I put weights on my hand.
Sure.
But yeah.
You know, I would say that you operate this very unique space where you are such a great actor and you've managed to kind of create, you kind of stay out of any category. You're very unique. Like you've just, I don't know, you've got this kind of patina about you that's very fucking, I remember the first time I was like, wow, this guy is amazing. I was watching, it was Last King of Scotland, which was years ago, I know.
Fantastic. Thank
fucking you, right? Phenomenal Love. Film, dude. And yeah. I was like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
This guy's a fucking, right? And then you've just, every time I see you, you kind of carve out these different little niches for yourself and you stay, I don't know, you've got your own lane that you've created, which is really admirable because a lot of people kind of go into a kind of a cookie cutter thing. Is that something you're conscious of? Are you constantly going, fuck, I want to do something a little bit different. I want to be over here. I want to go over here.
Yeah, no, definitely. Look, 100%. I've been really lucky not to just have to play the same kind of thing again and again and again. Although, latterly, I have been looking at my fucking career. And latterly, I've been...
I'm going to want you to lay down right through this part and just elevate your head and just tell us what you're feeling.
Yeah. Well, you know, I am in my wanker gym, which is where I think about myself. generally, whilst looking at myself in that mirror over there.
Keep going. You were thinking about your career and what?
No, I think about my career and I'm thinking and talking about actors that I love and respect whilst doing press junkets for this movie that I've got coming out, Speak No Evil.
Sure.
It looks so good.
I think it's out now.
Well, yeah.
Well, hey, huh?
Yeah, it's out now.
And so many of the actors that I respect and admire, and I wouldn't say emulate because I don't try to emulate anyone, are actors who have repeatedly kind of done the same thing. And even if they're playing a character who's in a different situation or a different scenario, which means the same thing, it's the kind of the same guy and everything. And yet I don't disrespect them for that. And yet yeah. I've spent my whole career trying to go like, I'm going to be this guy. No, I'm going to be this guy.
Right.
No, I'm going to be this guy. And then luckily in Split and in Glass, I got to do many guys all in one, Incredible. Some women as well. So yeah. It kind of makes me call into question like the fucking point of playing all these different characters when all the actors I really love are like a type.
Yeah, it's a really, really good point. Because I am also a big fan of actors that, I really respect character actors that like yourself or like a Daniel Day-Lewis or something that can really morph into somebody completely different with the limp and the thing and the whole.
It's all about the limp.
But I really respect an actor that can be comfortable with just disappearing and not doing anything except just, excuse the term, story, servicing the story and just not doing any sort of performance. Do you know what I mean? Like that takes a lot of talent too. And I love those actors.
Do you know what it is? Listen, I can put it down to a turning point in my career. Let's go, guys.
Yeah.
the interview starts now.
No, guys, it's about to get profound. Yeah. Let's go. Yeah. I've definitely got an erection.
Yeah. You're not really talking until you say the words "my" and "career" next to each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I did a film when I was in my mid to late 20s that was, I can't really say what film it is because I'll end up slagging off at the person that I'm talking about. But slagging off means bad mouthing.
Yeah.
And translated for you colonials. So it was great success and everything went great and we got award nominated and we were like, we made loads of money and all that. like a year and a half, 2 years later, he comes back to me and he's like, dude, I want you to do this film with me. It's based on a book. And I read the book and I'm like, I love this character. It's amazing. I get the script. I read the script. And they've chopped the balls off the character completely. And this incredibly dynamic, fucking diverse, like acting character that is in the book is just this guy who's like,
hello, right. How are you?
Yeah.
Doe-eyed and cries a lot and like, yeah. Like does a lot of silent acting. Does a lot of movie acting, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which I'd done previously with this director to great acclaim and all that kind of stuff. And it was good for me. And we had a chat about it and I said, well, look, I don't think we've really captured who he is in the book and stuff. And we kind of had a bit of a tit-a-tit, mm-hmm. right? And he goes, oh, no, I get it. You want to do acting.
Oh, boy.
Oh,
and wow. I was like, that kind of made my decision for me. Because I didn't say this to him, but inside I was like, do you know what, mate? Yes, I fucking do.
Right, it's what I do.
And, but then I have this moment at 45 going like, why are all the actors I really admire not doing any acting? Uh-huh. And I'm out here going like, look at my lip. Look at my accent. And, right. But I like telling the story on purpose. I get pissed off doing movie acting. I don't enjoy it. And yet, I do get to watch other actors do movie acting, and I go, fuck, that's brilliant. It's like magic.
Yeah, but I mean, as long as it's, not to oversimplify it, but as long as it's real and it comes from a real place, who cares about any of it? It's like, you know.
Yeah, and James, when you say movie acting, you're talking about smaller sort of leading man stuff, right? Where you're just
I'm talking about like...
Right.
Holy shit.
Facting. Face right. acting.
This
sometimes it's great. Like, sometimes I can watch something and go, that's full. That is right. real. And I'm like, I'm there for it. But nothing acting, sometimes it winds me up so much.
I'm with you on that.
And I want to watch somebody give something. Like, I personally believe that the origins of performance and the origins of performance art, the orange of performance art is in an orchard in Sicily. I think the origin of performance art comes from fucking human sacrifice. It comes from sacrificing a goat or sacrificing a baby or sacrificing a person and a bunch of people watching it going, please let it rain this year. And that's the origin of theater. That's the origin of... And the person that's up there getting sacrificed, turned into performers, sweating blood, sacrificing something of themselves, whether that's literally their health, their blood, their dignity, their sexuality, their fucking humanity, whatever it is that you're sacrificing when you're on stage or on screen, you got to leave something up there. You got to work. I want to see somebody sweat blood. Now, that's not for everybody. Some people want to watch an actor just go like that.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
James.
And they put music over it.
What kind of mushrooms are you on? Because I
And we will be right back.
And now back to the show.
No. I think there's a lot of truth to what you said. And, you know, it's funny when you were describing that experience working on that film and you said, yeah, it did well. We got all the awards and then we made lots of money. And I was thinking about it, and I don't mean to get too heady about this, but as you said, it struck me as like, isn't it funny doing this thing that you do? That one of the marks of success is if you go to go and do it, to create art, if you will, is how much fucking money it made. And at the end of and maybe I'm getting old right in this moment. It just occurred to me for some reason, it really hit me like, imagine that's a fucking measure of how good something is how much fucking money it made. And that all these people, and all of us, me included, consider what we do to be successful depending upon whether or not it made any fucking money.
Yeah.
I'm not even railing against the system. I'm just saying that isn't it funny? Like sometimes it hits you in different times. You think like, wow, isn't that fucking...
Here's my spin on it because, which is, maybe it sounds like I'm trying to backtrack and justify and reverse engineer something that makes me sound like I've got more integrity. But, I think that I do what I do and I put myself out there for criticism and even if it's a successful piece, like not everybody likes it and you take fucking crazy criticism, even in the stuff that people said was good. Mm. And what it means when you make some money is that, fuck, people actually went to see it and we found an audience and we communicated. and we manage to communicate with people, because that's all it is, isn't it? Art is just about communication. Sometimes when we say, when we're making art, people go like, oh, then they go, they're talking about art. What it means is we're trying to communicate. Art is an attempt to communicate. And if you've made some money, what it really means is you managed to communicate.
Yeah.
You managed to find, instead of this nebulous thing where it's like, yeah, I got this movie on a website at the moment, it's doing great.
Yeah,
like 4.5
yeah.
people have seen it worldwide, and it's fucking, it's out there. And you're like, that's even, you can make a great piece of art, but nobody saw it. So you didn't get to communicate. And that is something that's becoming harder and harder to do in the cinemas. Maybe it's easier to do it in the streamers, but it's also like the streamers are like this, this like kaleidoscope of whirlpools that you're getting pulled into, and each whirlpool has 1,000 things in it that the algorithm helps you watch. I don't know, but
I think that I think that's fair. I think that's fair. I think that's really fair. It's a marker of how much you were able to, how many people you were able to connect with, I suppose. And that makes sense. How did you get into this game? What was the thing? Did you come by it honestly? Did you have parents in the arts, or was it just on your own?
I grew up in a council estate in Glasgow called Drumchapel. Council estate is something you guys call, not schemes, projects. So I was in high school, I was about 15, 16. We were doing Macbeth in English. My English teacher knew a director and an actor who'd done Macbeth in the 70s, and he came in and talked to us. I recognized him immediately because he was like a movie actor. He'd done like movies with Chris O'Donnell. And I was like, I've seen you in Vertical Limit. You're like the bad guy in Vertical Limit with fucking Chris O'Donnell. And I was like, wow. And then I was like, I've also seen you in a film with fucking Arnold Schwarzenegger. And he was pretty cool. He took a lot of shit from some of the guys in the class. And at the end of it, I just went up and I said, listen, I'm sorry about that. Thank you very much for coming. If you were making a movie again, because he was a film director, would you please consider letting me come and making tea or coffee for you?
Wow.
And for a week or something like that. And he called back months later and he was like, is that kid still there? Send him to the production office. He was making this movie about child prostitution and pornography in Glasgow.
Wow.
And he was like, here's the script, read it. And I read it and I went, come in here. Can you try and play Kevin, this young guy called Kevin Savage? And he was like, can you make yourself cry? And I'd never done any acting at this point.
Wow.
And I got the part. And we left the room and he was like, we found the guy, this is him. And do you know what's really weird, right? There was a TV show called Streetwise. It was a kid's show. And it was about mountain bike couriers in London that were led by a saxophone playing Andy Serkis. Right?
No way.
And I loved, yeah, man.
That's
and I, kid show. And I loved it. They were like crime fighting mountain bike couriers. It was brilliant. And he played the saxophone. And I was like, that's Andy Serkis. He was walking into the production office. And Andy was playing a Glaswegian pimp with dreadlocks. And my first bit of being a professional actor was literally being told, you're going to play the part. And then I walked out and Andy Serkis went, are you actually from Glasgow? Are you like the real deal, like from a council estate or whatever? And I was like, yeah, man. And he was like, great, come sit with me. And he was like recording me and recording my voice. And I was teaching Andy fucking Serkis from Streetwise how to do my
accent. For my sister, Tracy in Wisconsin, Andy Serkis is Gollum in Lord of the Rings. He was Planet of the Apes. He's a great character actor, also great director, incredible guy. Yeah.
Just a good guy as well.
Who was the director of this film, the child prostitution that discovered you?
It was a movie called The Near Room. It was a reference to a Muhammad Ali quote talking about the space that he would go, I think, before a fight where the alligators play trombones. And it was a guy called David Heyman, not to be confused with the producer who does Harry Potter and since then many, many things.
Right.
But Scottish actor, director, philanthropist, and really good actor. But I'd said to him, like, and I was not that good in the film. Mm. And I've said publicly quite a few times, like, I'd love to pay him back. I'd love to be in something for him. And he sent me something one day and I was like, I don't think it's quite right for me.
Yeah, right.
There's not enough acting in it.
So from that point on, and then as you kind of built this career for yourself over many, many years, and you just kind of kept going up and up and up and up and up and more and bigger projects that have more recognition and audiences that grew and everything. Is there something that you learned that was so valuable that you can share? Because I think, you know, I look back when I was a young actor and I'm like, I wish somebody would have fucking told me blank, A, B, and C. And then you get older and you look back and you wish, nobody pulls you aside and said, this is how the business works. This is what you should be looking for. Like, I wish somebody would have told me, you know,
camera blank. Adds 10 pounds.
Or something like that. Like, or just the business side of it, too. Yeah.
Must have been driving over a canyon when you got that note.
Oh, wait, shit. You know what? Sean must be using two cameras right now, then.
Oh, my God. You guys are harsh. You guys are friends, right? You guys just like each other and shit, right?
We're very old friends.
But James, so you didn't really kind of start this super passionate about it. Like, this wasn't your plan really to be an actor out of the gate, right? What was it?
No.
Wasn't it?
No,
so, weren't you going to maybe be a priest at one point, or is that just a Wikipedia lie?
No way,
no,
really.
Deep no. research here.
It's a lie that I've told in many interviews.
really?
No, it's just to try and make myself sound like I'm the kind of guy you want to corrupt and attract people to me. I considered being a very specific kind of priest. Not a handsy one for a start.
Then I'm out.
We just lost Sean.
I thought being a missionary sounded kind of cool because you get to go to far-flung places and do far-flung things and have a great time. I then started to finally find a little bit of luck with the opposite sex around about 15 and 16 and went, I am not selling my sexuality to God for the rest of my life. So it was Catholicism, wasn't it? So that took me out of that. I was going to join the Navy at one point and then I was going to go to university. And then I thought, listen, I did this acting thing when I was 16. I'll try it for acting school, the one acting school in my town, in my city. And I luckily got in.
Is this the Royal Scottish Academy of Music and Drama?
Formerly known as, now known as the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland.
And this you don't just pay $10 and get in to that place. This is a very, very prestigious
I come from a country with a proud history of socialist democracy. So I was the last year to have their tuition completely paid for them.
It ain't some swinging door there. This is a high end institution.
Yeah. I guess it was tough to get in. I was lucky I got in at my first try. If I hadn't got in at my first try, I might have gone off and done one of those other things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But listen, to answer your question, Sean, I would say there's a couple of things that I would pass on. One is try and be more American in terms of what you do as an actor. Try and create your own work. Because you guys, I think it's changing now. Me coming up, it felt like us as young actors, it was like you're a hired gun. You're like a carpenter that's hired in.
Right.
And you guys, when I met you guys, you guys back in like 2003 when I first started coming to America, I was like, whoa, wait, you're like, you've got two auditions a month and you've got a production company and you've written four scripts and you're like, how'd you do this? Like, what do you mean? You got a development deal with who? I was like, what? I could not believe. But it's also grown up within an industry that is actually an industry, whereas in Britain, it's a little bit, we feel lucky to be here and we feel lucky to get to do the secret thing that like fairies and elves get to do. And it feels a bit more like a cottage industry.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of what I meant a little bit was like, being an actor is plenty. You know, there's a lot of work that goes with that.
Yeah.
But as to your point, a lot of people are realizing the industry is changing. You kind of have to be all things in order to, you have to kind of cultivate your own work for yourself. And so I just didn't know if that was something that you're doing now. Like, are you delving into other aspects, directing, producing, writing, anything like that?
I'm directing at the moment. I'm about to go into prep for my first film on the 26th of August.
It's really exciting.
Which is really exciting. I don't want to produce. I don't want to write. I don't want to do those things. I've done those things in the past and I did not find it to be my wheelhouse.
Yeah. What's drawing you to the directing?
Control, power, abuse of it. not the paycheck.
No.
Not the paycheck.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I've been looking to tell stories about my own country for a long, long time. And every single story I got sent was like gritty Scottish drama.
Yeah.
About drugs and the kind of neighborhoods I grew up in and all
that. Trainspotting.
Yeah. Yeah. But actually, Trainspotting would be okay because that was an incredibly beautiful, artistic way to tell stories about people who have no opportunities. Right. But likewise, this is a true story. But I just burped on camera really loud.
That's okay.
Yeah,
do not cut that.
I can smell
it's
it.
It's only audio. Yeah. It's only audio.
Audio smells. Do you want me to tell you what it's about?
Yeah, please. Yeah,
of course.
It's not going to be out for like 14 years, so don't worry.
Yeah, great.
Are you in it or are you just going to direct it?
I need to be in it. I need to be in it to get it bonded. Yeah. It's a true story about two rappers from Dundee who rapped about Scottish things in their Scottish accent. They came down to London in the early 2000s and they did an audition for Sony. They literally got laughed out of the room, even though they were awesome. And they came back like a year later. They'd re-recorded all their demos and all their backing tracks with American accents and they pretended to be these two skater dudes from Hemet in California.
Yeah.
And they got a record deal from the same label that day.
Oh my God.
For $35,000. And they got housed and they got given a studio and they got an A&R rep. And for 2.5 years, they pretended to be 24/7. Like even when they were alone together, they pretended to be these two dudes called Syllable and Brains.
Wow.
And they nearly made it. They nearly made it. It's an incredible story. So that's the film we're making.
That's pretty great.
It's called California Scheming.
Oh, that's so good. Wait, who's doing it with you?
It's just me on my own with my camcorder.
And a mirror.
I'm going to shoot it on my iPhone in my basement. I'm really excited. We're independent at the moment. Studio Canal are involved. Screen Scotland are involved.
No, but I mean, it's two guys. It's you're one of the guys and who's your
partner?
I ain't
one of the guys. I'm too old. These guys were like 19, 20.
Hang on. I don't know where Will's going with this. Will, you got a pretty high, low range there. You can play 19, 20. Give us just a little bit of rapping, Will?
Yeah, in Scottish.
No. They're American.
Yeah, they're American. So you're perfect.
Sean, listen to James's story much? Fucking Jesus.
All right, so Will, I was throwing this as an opportunity to audition just a little bit, Will. So,
I'm the beatbox. You do the rapping. No, you're rapping.
You're auditioning for this.
Okay.
All right, never mind. James, what about now this film that you're
rapping? Go ahead.
This film that you're going to be directing, the role that you're going to be playing in it, is it a role that is going to, that is appropriate for you to do? Sort of character type acting, or is it a role that would be more appropriate if you were to do that level of acting? Would you be overplaying the part, or do you just need to just be a guy?
Or can we see some good hard looks? Will you just throw a bunch of hard looks?
I think there's going to be some hard looks. There's going to be some
smoking
look right hard looks. I think it just requires me to be kind of me.
Yeah.
But I might get nervous and at the last minute throw in a limp.
or just have the guy have a cold the whole movie. Yeah.
That's a good idea. He's got to be Scottish.
I make a suggestion? First of all, the hard looks are good, so I don't want to eat into them because you do them really, really well. Have you thought about an eye patch?
Hey, that's the thing. If I internalize the eye patch, you will see the eye patch.
I know probably everybody comes up to you and says how brilliant you were in Split, but I thought it was like you should have won an Academy Award. Like it was incredible performance.
Thank you.
Tell me you played all these different characters because the guy was a fucking serial
Split personality.
Or whatever. Yeah. But also these different accents and different characters, and you buy each and every one of them. Like to your point, they were all real. They were all very real. So tell me about the process, and were you scared to do that many different kind of people?
I was not scared. I got that job pretty last minute because it was meant to be Joaquin Phoenix.
Oh, really?
Excuse me, I just burped again. I'm drinking fizzy water, guys. Yeah. It's all I drink. Joaquin Phoenix was supposed to do it because he had a relationship with M. Night Shyamalan from like Signs. And was he in The Village as well? I think he's in The Village, isn't he?
Yeah.
And so. And then I don't know what happened, but like 2 weeks before they started shooting, he read the script or something and went, "This, I don't want to do this." And for whatever reason, he fell out. And so I get the call saying, "Hey, do you want to read this? It's super secret. You've got to read it and then like give it back." And I was like, "Cool." And they were saying it's M. Night Shyamalan. And I've been a fan of loads of his films. And I was like, "Definitely." It came to me and I thought, this has got the potential to be really good. Like, yeah. It could also go off a cliff and be really bad. But I think that's the case with most really interesting or fun things.
Right.
They could go either way. That's not a criticism of his material there, by the way. But yeah, it was a lot of characters. It was a lot of work, but it was well written. And I thought, it's good hard work. And as long as I've got enough time to come up with this, we can figure it out. But yeah. It was down to the wire, trying to find all the characterizations. The last one we found was at the table read. In fact, like Jason Blum had flown in, and like people for Universal had flown into Philly where we made the film, and I'm doing this table read, going like, we haven't really found the character Hedwig, and at the last minute,
he modeled it after Blum.
Yeah, I just drove around LA in a van all the time.
I just want to say to Blum, you finally made it onto the podcast. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So,
he's listening. He's listening.
He's in the queue. He's coming in.
Oh, yeah.
We love him.
Very much like
we love
him. Soon. We're going to bring him on.
We hope
he's good, man. He's cool. I think their company do good things.
For Tracy, Jason Blum is Blumhouse, at Blumhouse Pictures, all the
And he does also, he also does drive around LA in a van. So, Jason, right about that.
He does.
A plumbing van. But this new film is a Blumhouse as well, right? Speak No Evil?
This new film is a Blumhouse as well. And it does what Blumhouse does so well.
The trailer looks great.
I think so too.
Yeah. We love him. We are going to have him on. But wait, I want to hear. So you're there. You haven't found the last thing. You're at the table reading. It's like fucking down to the wire.
It's down to the wire. And the director, Knight, goes, listen, I think for the character of Hedwig, the kid in the movie, he's like, I think you should do it with like a sibilant S. And I'm like a lisp? He's like, we say sibilant S. And I was like, all right, cool. I'll do it with a sibilant lisp. And I'm like, what? I'm just going to throw this in to the table read. I was like, are you kidding? Oh, fuck. Okay. And then within seconds of doing it, I was like, this was a good call. And suddenly the whole character like came together. It was a lot of heavy lifting, that job, but if you can lift it, then it's a good lift. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm speaking like I'm a total bro.
Yeah, but again, for Tracy, you know, when you shoot a movie, it's all out of order. You're not like taking care of, you do one character and then you're done, and then in James's case, you do another character and then you're done. You're probably playing what, sometimes three or four different characters on the same day.
Yeah.
Right?
That's crazy.
And would you agree that, you know, you seem to be the kind of real actor that will find the version of each character inside you. And if that is true, then when you're playing in a movie where you're playing multiple characters and basically, you know, going through schizophrenia, does it ever become super taxing on yourself to explore all those different parts of yourselves and try to be as authentic and as believable as possible, and it sort of like triggers and brings these characters up in you, and you don't know who the hell you are then when you go home?
Or are you just doing a lisp?
I'm just you see me, man. You see me. I think there's only really been one time in my career where I brought it home. Actually, there's maybe three times in my career where I brought it home. But I do like what you just said. It is always me. Mm. It doesn't matter how weird it is or how wacky it looks or how different it seems from my personality. It's always me. There's no becoming the character. It's always me. There's always... It's some version of yourself, you know what I mean? So that's all you have to give.
Right.
And if some other actor says that, but no, I actually do transform into someone else, like I'm cool with that. I'll believe them too. But for me, it's all you have is your own tool, your own body. But the only jobs that I've brought at home were Macbeth, because it was all about losing children for me. And that, just the whole of Macbeth, I was apparently not an easy person to live with when I did Macbeth. And then whenever I've played a victim kind of twice now, maybe in a Danny Boyle movie called Trance, and then a movie that I just made in Germany. And I just felt awful about myself because I was such a victim of circumstance and other people's control. I did not enjoy that experience. Mm. And that's the only times that I've ever brought it home with me, mm-hmm. those three.
Wow.
We'll be right back.
All right, back to the show.
Now, in this trailer for Speak No Evil, you, by the way, you look huge. Like, you were, like, did you go to the gym, like, just for this part?
Cool it, Sean.
Dude, I'm just asking.
I'm like 6 foot four. It's on my IMDb page. I'm like bigger than Hugh Jackman. What are you talking about?
Are you really 6'4"?
No, Sean.
I'm 5'7".
Oh, are you? Are you?
By the way, Sean, you said, it should be noted, because it's, to be fair, you said that you always often bring it home from a movie.
Sure.
Sorry, by it, I mean craft service. Right? You usually bring a lot of it home with you, don't you?
Just bags, yeah. I just came home back from a family reunion. There's all this extra food there, and it's just like, there was like a bag of donuts. I grabbed those. I grabbed a couple other things. But yeah.
Did you really?
Yeah. But there's all this extra food, and I felt so bad throwing it out. Anyway.
What's that image of you, Sean Hayes, with bringing a bag of donuts onto a plane?
Hugging everybody like goodbye with you dick. Slinging the bag over their back while you hug them all.
Bad boy steals donuts from family reunion.
Yeah, powdered sugar. Hollywood bad boy,
Sean
Hayes. No, wait. You do look so buff in that trailer. It's like crazy. You look like you worked out crazy.
Do you know what? I didn't do it for the movie. I just did it for the fun. Mm-hmm. I did it because we were in the lockdown. We were in pandemic land.
Yeah, yeah.
I just had my second child. And I was like, do you know what? I can't let having a child again stop me from exercising for 3 years. So I was like, I'm going to double down. And I started eating crazy amounts of food and lifting crazy heavy weight. And 2 years later, this script came along. And it was like, oh, perfect. This works.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about when you decide to toggle between mediums, when you go between theater and film. Because you've done an incredible amount of very prestigious theater work, and I would imagine that's very rewarding to you.
Yeah.
But you also have to pay the bills, and you're a big movie star, and you probably enjoy doing that stuff too. So how do you decide between, is there a rhythm you like to maintain, or is it just kind of job to job kind of thing?
Rhythm is a dancer.
It's speaking my language.
Honestly, wonderful.
Wait, let's try to get some music in here.
Wonderful. That was wonderful.
Rhythm, I don't know if there's rhythm. My agent, Ruth Young, who I've been with since I was 20, always says, do one for them, do one for yourself. Mm. And it ends up being more a little bit like do like four for them and do one for yourself. If I come back and I manage to get to do theatre, it has generally over the last 15 years been with Jamie Lloyd, the same director, again and again and again. Mm. And the biggest thing with theatre for me is it's a risk because it's the most exposing thing you can do as an actor. And you have to go up and sacrifice something every single night. Mm. And if it's shit, you're sacrificing and it's like going down like a cup of cold sick and the audience are sitting there literally going like, or they're asleep, right? And you can fucking see it. Ugh. And that kills, man, that hurts. So it's whereas you make a movie, like the audience experience of that is like time traveling a year and a half in the future and you're not even there. Like you can get back and you get paid like way better and it's a different thing.
But it's not. It doesn't have the creative fulfillment for you, does it?
It does. Theater? They both have the creative fulfillment. But if I was going to be in a bad play or a bad movie, I'd rather be in a bad play. If I was going to be in a good play or a good movie, I'd rather be in a good play.
What about the time that it takes, the commitment you have to make ahead of time to commit to that play, rehearse, put it up, and you can't leave until it's done? Like how many really killer jobs have you missed because you've committed to a play and you're like, oh, fuck. Had no way of knowing that script is coming.
Not many, actually.
No?
I've missed some killer jobs because I didn't get them.
Uh-huh.
And I've missed... but then your career pans out differently and you're glad you didn't get it. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Everything has fun. Yeah.
Is there one job that, that you're comfortable telling us that you wish you would have gotten? That, yeah?
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Which one?
Deep Throat. No, I
Good Night Oscar.
Yeah.
the Broadway show with Sean Hayes.
Yeah, yeah.
So I went up for Pirates of the Caribbean when I was Nezobody.
This is Orlando Bloom's part?
Orlando ended up getting it. It was me. I think I remember it was a guy called Paul Nichols and Orlando and someone else. And I don't even think Orlando was auditioning, actually. I think he was off in Middle Earth doing that those movies yeah. with Peter Jackson. And it was me and these two other guys. Who
Sean.
I think.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's where it was. Yeah. Yeah, I believe it was the second film in the
Well, at that point, they were in Middle Earth, of course, but the Precious.
I believe they were in the Land of Mordor, where the shadows lie.
Yeah, Mordor.
Mordor. And I went and screened camera test. I think I got really close to it. I ended up having to do this camera test with Keira Knightley, who I later ended up doing a tournament with. Anyway, got real close to it, and then it never happened. But that was one that I was like, I would get to go to like sunny places
right.
and be on ships sunny and place. dress like with a wig on uh-huh. and like yeah. shoot like guns that have powder that come out of them because right. they're muskets, yeah. man. Yeah. And like Johnny Depp ended up being in it and Keira was amazing. It was.
And there were like five of them, right?
I Six know. Of them. There right. were like 15 of them, and I was kind of gutted about that one that I never right, got. Yeah.
I understand.
But then my career went a different way, and I was so happy with how my career went that I was very philosophical about it and like totally fine with it. But yeah. at the time, for about a year, I was like, "Man, the one that got away, you know."
Yeah.
There is one more I could tell you about.
Yes, please.
Yes.
But I don't want to tell you about it.
No, let's just have one more sip. One more sip.
there was a big one and the director who cast me in it, I'd seen him really early in my career for a small part in a movie playing like the younger version of one of the main bad guys at the beginning of the movie. So I'd only been in it for like 5-10 minutes, but it was like an awesome part.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I came in for this audition, and by the end of the audition, like, we'd shared so much life shit. He was crying, I was crying, like the audition went amazing. The acting was like, it went great. And as I'm walking out of the room, he's like, oh my God, well, we found the guy. It's him. We found the guy. They never even called my agent.
Christ.
Wow.
And then when you saw who they cast, were you like, oh, that's why I didn't get it?
No.
No?
I did not think great of their casting. However, that was like the snidiness of youth, maybe. But years later, there's this big, huge, gazillion-dollar movie getting made, and they come to me, and they go, listen, we would love you to meet so-and-so, this director. And so I go and sit down with this director, and I'm like, you remember me, right? And he's like, no, have we met? I'm like, I love your work. And I'm like, no, we met. And I relay the whole story to him. And he's like, nah, don't have a single memory of that, dude.
Oh,
and I'm like,
wow.
What? We were in tears together. You said we found the guy and looked right. at me as I left the room.
And so did you do this big film for him, or did you tell him to go fuck
off? I actually did sign on to the film, but it took 3 years. And yeah, I was like, I wasn't trying to like take him to task. I was just like, dude, this is funny. We need to talk about this.
Right.
But it took like 3 years to actually get it going. And by the time those 3 years had passed, I had a kid and this movie was being filmed on the other side of the world. And I was like, I am not going out there for a year and a half of my life to go and do whatever.
Good
you
for
know.
You.
What does Jimmy Flau do on the side, like when he's not acting?
On the side? We didn't talk about that, bro.
Drive a cab? Like, what do you mean?
For free?
Just get my shits. What do I do on the side?
Yeah.
Do you know what? It's like being a dad and... Yeah. Mm-hmm. Being a guy at home and I'm like...
I'm working out.
Anymore. Yeah. I haven't worked out in about 6 months. But yeah, I was doing a lot of that before.
Yeah, yeah.
Play video games with my kids.
Oh, yeah. What about didn't you burn one of your video games because you were too addicted to it?
Wait, what?
Yeah, so it's aptly...
James had a problem.
I had a real problem. I don't like to talk about it, but I feel
Let's
like
about
the more
right
I can make
now.
People aware, maybe I can help someone else.
Yeah, why don't you help somebody? Exactly.
If one person, if you can save
right?
one person.
Save a life right now.
You have a little gaming issue? Because I do too. I play a lot of games on my phone.
What do you play? What do you like to play?
Oh, just the dumbest shit.
No, he plays fucking Candy Crush. Yeah, it's not gaming.
Yeah, you don't talk to him, James. It's not playing Candy Crush.
I played a lot of, I played Call of Duty.
Stuff.
I played Call of Duty with the same dudes for like 10 years straight, like fucking 5 nights a week, man.
Oh,
I know I feel your pain. During the pandemic, I had my eldest son was 11 or 12. Archie, how long ago was that? He was like 11 or 12. I started letting him stay up to like 2 a.m. to play Call of Duty with my friends and me. And his mom calls me. She's like, you cannot let him stay up till fucking two to play with you and your moronic friends.
Right.
Yeah. Like, they're not my friends. They're like Laser Dude 6. Yeah. And he's also
These are my comrades. These are my brothers. We're in war together. These aren't my friends.
The squad. Right.
So you're in remission now, or are you still dabbling?
I'm in remission. He started. Listen, I've lapsed a couple of times. The first time I realized I had a problem, I was making a movie in Ireland with Anne Hathaway, mm-hmm. and it was called Becoming Jane. It was about Jane Austen, and I'm getting home every night, and my wife at the time had bought me an Xbox and this fantasy role playing game called Oblivion, The Elder Scrolls, aptly. Yep. Fucking entitled Oblivion, because that's what it was taking my life. Yeah. And I remember getting home from work at like 7 or 8 or like 9, one of those crazy hours that you get home at in the movie business. And I order a pizza and like a 2 liter bottle of Coke, or as we call it in Scotland, a 2 liter bottle of ginger. Any soft drink, fizzy soft drink, can be called ginger.
Ginger.
2 liter bottle of ginger and a Pizza Hut. And and I stick in Oblivion and I go to Oblivion. And then I just remember going, I'll just play for five minutes more. And then my driver is waiting to take me to work at 6:30 in the morning. Oh, and I was God. And this is like not the first time it had happened on that job either. And I was like, something has changed.
Oh, wow.
And I press the eject button and the CD comes out of the disc drive, mm-hmm. and I go over to the gas stove and I turn on the gas stove and I'm standing there like this going, like, how am I going to like fall in love with Jane Austen today? And I'm like, because you know, and and then I just drop it on the gas stove and I just watch it melt, and then I walked away.
That's a bottom.
Yeah, I mean, it's a real thing. Like, people, it's a
real thing.
Yeah,
and your bottom is only when you decide to stop digging, you know what I mean? That's up to you.
Yeah. But the pandemic, I had the same thing as you, man. I had, like, three buddies. We all went, hey, guys, should we just get, like, a... Should we all get, like, a PS4 or something like that? And we're like, we'll all play some shooting game? To, like, 2 years later, and we're like... John, I'm going in, man. Back me up, back me up. Push.
It got, I know. Oh it got God. So fucking crazy. And then I recently had one of my friends say, hey, we're still playing. I'm like, no, I'm never going. I can't do it, man. Not right now.
I think I'm the last man standing. I'm the last guy still playing.
You are.
You are still playing.
So you've managed to find the right size for it.
The right size for my addiction?
Yeah. I mean, you're not staying up until dawn anymore, are you?
No. There had to be a cap. Do you know what? To be honest, I came back from a job in Germany where I did a lot of it because I was just on my own and I didn't have my family with me, and that was quite good. And I bought a little laptop to make it like portable.
Yeah.
But since I've come home and I'm getting into prep and I'm casting and I'm working on the script and all that, there's just no time for it.
Yeah, it's all
good.
And
actually, it's been kind of good. Yeah. But because it's time to be an adult at 45.
What game is it? What game is it that you're...
Call of Duty, man.
Yeah, of course.
Like during the pandemic, it was running around Verdansk getting killed by like 12-year-old guys in China.
Dude, like, how crazy was that when they did that first what do they call the big map that they dropped during the pandemic? The fucking
Verdansk.
Yeah. It was fucking crazy, wasn't it?
It was crazy. But it was so good.
But within a month, those kids were so good at sniping that you couldn't even last for a minute. Like you'd land and you'd be dead.
We were bad at that game for 2 years. My squad and I, we were, what were the name? There was K-Chuck. There was a, because it was the pandemic, one of them named themselves Touch of Flu. And then the other one was Severe Shock O. And I was Walker Janeway, which is a character I played in a kind of a middle-class New York play once. And I'm like, there's people running around going like, I'm going to kill you, Severe Shoko. I'm going to kill you, Touch of Flu. And then going, I'm going to get you, Walker Janeway? Yeah. It was so good. It was like so bougie. But it was. And you know what I found as well, right? I've been pals with those guys since my early 20s. And what was really special about it was that we'd be running around going like, push, I'm going in. Fucking hell, John, support me. So when did you say that you got that procedure done? Oh my God, dude, that's really interesting. I never knew that about you. And we were just like, bleh, in a way we never had.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny that you say that. As much as I sort of rail against it too, and I do love gaming, is that I stayed connected to a lot of guys. We have this crew of us, the clown crew. We're on a text chain that we've been on since 2007. in that we all play this game together. And these guys know, and Jason especially knows, because we did a few things in the gaming thing. And it's like me and Giles, who goes by Kid Lightning, and Mark, who goes by Foreman Beast. He's known as Beast to all of us. Mm-hmm. They all call me Wendell, because my handle is Wendell Leaf, because it's named after my favorite hockey player. And we've had so many moments. I was texting with the guys this morning. Our buddy Jerry, who we also call Gary for no reason, Gary just had his second kid, and we're all congratulating him on the thing. And we all know each other from the gaming thing. And so there is a community thing. It's quite nice.
I don't know if you remember, Will, you try to get me like years and years and years ago. Try to get me on one of those groups. I played for maybe 7 minutes.
Yes,
and I couldn't exit the thing. I just would get shot like right every single time right away, and I couldn't figure out like, so I'd be like, let's try it again. And we'd start again, and I'd come out with these guns, and everybody just bang 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 bang, like I'd just be dead in 2 seconds. It was awful.
It's brutal.
But it is a good way to connect, and that's part of it. I do like that part of it for sure.
We were so bad at it for two solid years. We never got any better, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We laughed our asses off.
I love that.
Well, James, you're a lot of fun. We've laughed our asses off with you today.
And we sure
appreciate your time, my friend. Very nice to get to know you. Huge fans of yours.
Massive. It's really cool to meet you.
Great time directing.
Yes, I talk about you all the time. I just think you're an incredible actor.
Thanks, you guys.
Speak No Evil, out now. It is from the great Jason Blum. Directed, written by James Watkins, everybody. Speak No Evil. Check it out.
Go and see it.
Yeah, Jimmy Frow. Thanks, Jimmy Frow.
Jimmy Flow. James McAvoy.
Thanks, you guys. Guys, thanks a million. Seriously, love your stuff. And as performers, actors, writers, directors, you're fucking amazing, the threes.
Thank you. It was really, really great to meet you, my friend.
Thank you.
Really
see great. You around, guys.
All right, cheers. Buddy. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Thank you, James. Bye, buddy.
Wow.
Hey guys, we're back. We're back. We're back from commercial.
Hi.
Do we do commercials after?
No, we don't.
No, we don't.
Do you remember hearing a commercial play? He just hung up.
Right. So guys, that was James McAvoy. And you know what? I gotta tell you, I'm not buying the accent. I think he needs to work on that.
Yeah. Really? You don't think it's?
Yeah, I mean, everyone knows he's from Dayton, Ohio, and he's been working on the Scottish
Dayton, Ohio. He's great though. Like I didn't ask him about Narnia and like Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I was obsessed
or
with
X Men. I mean,
or
X Men.
I know. I'm not like a massive X Men thing. Like I think he's great.
Well, walk us through it though.
What's missing for you with that?
No, I like it. It's just. Never hooked into it. I mean, I watched them all and they're great. I'm not a rabid fan.
What about Narnia?
Of the series.
What about
But Narnia? Yeah, the Narnia things. I wish
that
version was
that you
so
didn't
great.
Like or the witch?
No, so he played the Fawn. What was his name?
The Fawns.
Tumnus?
Tummy Sticks.
Something like that. And didn't you guys like that book when you were a kid?
Of course.
Never read it.
Oh, it was the best.
Of course, I read the whole series. They were fucking great.
Yeah, so
great.
Books.
Great book.
But anyway, I didn't get a chance to ask him. When he popped on, I was like, oh, I've actually always wanted to meet him. And so I got to meet
him. Who wrote those books? Quick.
C.S. Lewis.
Nice.
Yeah, thanks.
Oh. Hey, Willie, are you still doing that book club thing?
Yeah.
When's that launching?
Book club with myself. I don't know. We are going to do, we are going to be launching the Smartless. It's been a time thing, but we are going to do the Smartless book club.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and,
because if you mention a book, I will read it and we can talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. And JB, thank you for sending us over those book recos from your pal, from Laura, which is always, it's nice to get book recos.
Yeah, because you don't want to, it's like television recos or movie stuff.
It's,
like
it's hard to fucking narrow it down. There's so many fucking books out there. Yeah.
James kind of looks like if Heath Ledger had a baby with Jude Law.
Right, you know, I was thinking he looks a lot like Josh Charles, our friend Josh Charles. Do you guys know Josh?
Oh, he does remind me of Josh Charles. Certainly,
Josh Charles.
I love Josh.
Baltimore Orioles fan.
Yeah,
incredible actor.
Well, because he's from Baltimore.
He's a wonderful bloke.
He is a wonderful
bloke in Scotland.
No, they don't. But you know what? That's okay. I think they might sometimes. That McAvoy, that Jimmy Flow,
Jimmy Flow.
Yeah, he's got something about him, doesn't he? He's just cool. He's very down to earth. He's got a real sort of authenticity to him, which I really like the cut of his jib. Very much like the
and
cut
you
of
could,
his jib.
You could hang out with that guy.
I could hang out with that guy. He's really cool.
We would hang. We would do some hard hanging.
And every single time he plays.
I have a lot of comments for people who walk by. You know what I mean? Like a lot of like, look at this fucking guy. You know what I mean?
every time he plays a different character, I totally.
Buy it. We really snuck that one up on a shiny boy. Nice going. Smart.
Smartless is 100% organic and artisanally handcrafted by Bennett Barbaco, Michael Grant Terry, and Rob Armjarf.
Smartless.
So, Jason and Willie, we have a new show on Smartless Media called
That
Goal.
I'm very, very excited. Sorry, I just cut off when you said the title, Goalless.
Goalless, right.
Now, Sean and I are excited about it too, but here's what's good. Yes. Sean and I are much more sort of like a bit more of the typical American audience that does not know as much about soccer
as
you do. So you have taken that into account with the way in which you've gone about developing this podcast.
Correct.
Yes?
Well,
correct.
I want to introduce you guys to the great.
The greatest.
Russell Howard. Hello.
Russell Howard, here he is.
Yes.
Russ, here. So, Russ, I'm going to let you describe Goalless because football is my soccer, whatever you want to call it, is my passion. I love it. Mm. But you are our host because you are even more passionate and have grown up in this milieu. Go ahead, Russell Howard.
And also, by the way, for my sister, Tracy, one of the most successful stand-up comedians in the UK.
And not related to Ron.
No.
Just to be clear. Just to be clear.
Not related to Ron. I'm a stand-up comedian from England. And I was, thank you. Mm-hmm. I was given the opportunity to do this podcast about football. And basically, it's going to be like a late night sort of show about soccer, football, whatever you want to call it. We're going to talk about the Champions League. Oh. We're going to be interviewing ex-pros, current pros, celebrities that like football. It's everything you can imagine.
Do you have a band?
I don't have a band, no.
Yeah. And we'll get you one of those.
Okay.
We'll get you a small band. Like a slide flute and a hi-hat. Yeah.
Imagine that. If that's the first complaint of the show, it's good. There's a lot of funny chat about football. But where's the band?
Could use a band. You're going to talk about Champions League. Now Jason and Sean, Champions League is the tournament that they do yearly of all the top, basically, in essence, the top four teams from all the domestic leagues all over Europe and the UK play against each other in midweek games throughout the year. And finally, in the spring, they narrow it down. They start in group play, then they get into elimination.
And Russell has got me excited about soccer. So I actually
it's the best.
Yes,
Champions League football is incredible.
At some point, we're going to have to figure out, so you don't have to keep saying soccer, I mean football, over and over. We have to figure out what to call them. But anyway, that's
I'll call it soccer for you people. I don't mind. All right, at home, I can't. If I say football, it's, you know, this podcast can be listened
to all over the world, though, right? So what do you prioritize the American audience, the global audience? What do you do?
I don't know, Jason. It's a very difficult
one.
We'll
wait
I'm
to see the
to...
numbers. Yes. Whoever listens most gets soccer or football.
By the way, Russell said, I don't know, Jason, that sounds like some PA on Jason's set when he's like, what's for lunch, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, I don't know, Jason. Would you fucking leave me alone?
There's a lot of dips, Jace.
We've been through this when we had David Beckham on. I think we were talking about, you know, that soccer is actually an English term, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So you know this.
Well, exactly. But it is whatever we want to call it. I can't call it soccer. It would be like calling my mum mummy. It gives me the ick.
Yeah. But you know what? The British accent covers you. I think anytime you say football, people are going to think you mean soccer because you're saying it with a British accent.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And we'll just be, it's like, not only do I love football, but it's such an innately funny sport. Like the supporters are hilarious. I don't know if you've never been to a live football game in England, if you go
a long
just
time ago,
being it's the best.
I like the singing.
It's incredible.
How do you learn? Is there a website you can go to learn the chants before you get to a game?
That's such a good point because they must meet up in a pub and harmonize.
Yeah.
So there must be like football hooligans who are sort of sat there in a council flat going, oh, look to me for the changes. Here we go. You're going home in a fucking ambulance. Come on, right. All together.
When I listen to Goalless, I want to learn about these things. I want you to take care of the dingbats like me too. Yeah. You know, not yes. just the smarties like Will.
Russell, you're a Reds fan, yeah? You're a Liverpool supporter.
I am a Liverpool fan, yeah.
Yes, the same here, hardcore. And I have been, I'm newer, obviously, to it. It's only been like 10 years for me.
Oh, wow.
So
what was your in?
My a friend of the podcast, Chappie, Mark Chappell, who's an Englishman who lives in London. Here's the Chappie mention. He got me into it like 10 years ago when we were working together, and I've become full, and I, you know... Now, look, I'm into Arne Slot. I'm so happy he's there. But Jurgen Klopp has been my hero, my North Star for years now. Mm. I had the opportunity to hang out with him a couple of times in the last few years.
These are the coaches listening.
Wow. It's just been incredible. Yeah, and I've gone out of my way to learn some of the songs, some of the, like, you know, we conquered all of Europe. We're never going to stop.
From Paris down to Turkey.
We've won the fucking lot. Oh, Bob Paisley and Bill Shankly. Let's do it. The fields of Anfield Road. We are loyal supporters. And we come from Liverpool.
Now, how do you learn this?
Is it on a website?
Like, how do you?
Yeah, because you're like, what are they singing?
What I love most about it is it clearly is on a website, but it's the fact that Will Arnett has clearly been in his shower singing it, practicing it, rehearsing.
Who gets to decide what songs are going to be sung on what week? Like,
this is the point. Yeah. Because they're often really funny. I remember. There's a brilliant story of the Rangers goalkeeper, Andy Gorham, who basically came out and said he was a schizophrenic. Mm-hmm. And his own crowd that week started chanting, there's only two Andy Gorhams, two Andy Gorhams.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's what I mean. With football, there's sort of like this sort of galaxy around it that is sort of just naturally piss-taking. Like some of the best moments at a football game happen with the crowd. Like footballers get abuse. Like, and I'm a stand-up comedian. The heckles you get are nothing compared to footballers. I remember seeing, I went to a Bath City game. I don't know if I can, there was maybe about 500 people there.
Yeah.
It was Boxing Day. And it was a pre-match warm-up and the goalkeeper was quite a heavy set lad. And he was just getting one of the balls out of the net. Uh-huh. And he looked at this kid who must have been about 11. And he said, did you have a good Christmas? And this little kid went, looks like you did, you fat cunt. And there's no world in which that's allowed. Like this poor guy just had to take it from an 11-year-old kid. And it's that just vicious.
This is the kind of flavor and spice we want to get from you on a weekly basis.
But that's what I mean. It was so fascinating. And if you've never been to a football game, I remember taking my wife to watch Liverpool Paris Saint-Germain and she was just fascinated. All the sort of French football fans took their tops off and they were kind of swinging them around. And it's like this weird church that just goes crazy, Anfield, on a European night. So basically, that's what the podcast is going to be.
I mean, I love that. And it's growing and growing and growing. I mean, like,
crazy is, I was going to say that, sorry, Sean, but I was going to say that vibe that you get, I remember, like I said, I remember a lot. Just a couple months ago, I was at Anfield and sitting and watching, I think maybe I told you guys this story, watching Sir Kenneth Dalglish sitting right behind me with his wife and how many times they've been to Anfield. He was as a player and a manager, blah, blah, blah. And them singing,
You'll Never Walk Alone.
You Never Walk Alone. And his wife dabbing her eyes.
Oh.
And so moved by it.
Well, he's an incredible man as well.
He's incredible.
To get serious, the Hillsborough disaster. Where a lot of Liverpool supporters died. He went to every single funeral when he was manager. Yeah, wow. Every single one. And so the club is, you know, it's in his bones. So I think that song, you know, really takes him to a special place.
It is beautiful, and the whole stadium sings it. By the way, we're sitting there, and the stand opposite us is the Sir Kenneth Dalglish stand.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sitting right behind me. Like, it was just incredible.
But which is a bit harsh that they don't let him sit in his own stand.
I know. No. You know it's better. He gets to look at it. He gets to look at it. You know, Jason and I shared an office once, and
this is exciting.
And it was a big, long office, and I had this huge painting from a show. I wasn't there a lot. And I had this huge, he's giving me shit. And I'd be like, I don't want to be in the fucking, I had this huge painting of myself from a show. And one day when he was there, I had it, put it behind my desk, behind where I sat.
So he's always there.
And so he calls me one day and he goes, why did they put this fucking painting of you? And I go, because when I'm not there, you still get to look at me.
Yeah. Oh, you know what I mean? I remember doing that years ago. I had loads of kind of posters of various stand-up shows that I'd done. And I kind of thought, what would be a nice thing to have them? And then I put them up in this room in my house. And then as soon as I put it up, I just realized it was such a mistake because it just looks so weird and arrogant. I don't know if you've ever seen that MTV Cribs episode of Mariah Carey where she goes to like this padded room.
Of course I have. Yeah.
And she reads all the yes. notes from her fans. It was yes. just like, oh, what have I become, man?
I know.
Yeah, I know.
I know, right? What a house that was.
But at least we have you, and it's you and Chris Whittingham as well, is that
That's
true?
Right. Yeah, he's a CBS yeah. commentator. He's a funny guy, and he knows loads about football.
Now, so, this would be your sidekick?
He is. He's my co-host.
To continue with the late night show analogy?
Yeah. Yeah, he's basically, he's got all the knowledge, and we're just going to kind of riff, and then we'll have kind of celeb guests, and it's going to basically be... It's the dream job for me.
Will, are you going to be the first guest?
I'm hoping I will be a guest if they'll ask me.
Are you waiting for someone to reach out?
Well, yeah, man. I mean,
I can reach out.
Right.
Well,
now.
I don't want to. Well, do I don't want to be presumptuous right and think that they
make some news.
Want to fucking talk to me? Because I'm just.
I would love to talk to you.
Would you?
And
there it is. We have our first booking.
Have you ever played at Anfield? That would be my first question.
I've never played. I've been on the pitch.
Save it for the show. Yeah. Save it for the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, don't get. Yeah, you don't.
Yeah, try to make a deal.
I've seen Mo Salah getting a rubdown after a match.
Okay.
And I had. And
was that
I
at
had,
the changing room, or did you just?
That was at the hotel.
A really good telescope.
No. That was through the
just
blinds.
Just outside like that. Yeah.
This one fucking truck wouldn't move, and I finally got a glimpse. I got the look at the angle I wanted. I had Darwin Nunez walk by and basically give me a high five holding a towel, and he was just in a towel. I mean, some pretty cool.
Were you in the changing room?
Yeah. Right Jesus. After the match.
That must have felt so awkward.
It was very awkward.
What do you do? Because basically they're all having a shower.
Yeah.
And, you know.
You're just waiting with a stack of towels.
Does anyone want a Lucozade or a Gatorade or a power bar? Would you like
I tell you what they didn't appreciate was my boner.
Yeah, exactly. that's what you should have done. You should have got in the shower.
Yeah.
You should have got in the shower with them.
I know, I should have. That would have. Now you would have wanted to have me as a guest if I'd been
fully
in the shower.
You know. Exactly.
But there's so much to talk about. The football, as you said, Russell, it's so endless,
yes.
The stories. And that's what drew me into football, how I became – I love sports, but I became a football fan once I started to understand the stories of who this manager was, who this player was and stuff. That's actually what got – and I started watching all the docuseries about the various things. So we want to bring on Goalist, kind of bring listeners in so they can start to understand – the culture of football, of soccer, right?
That's exactly it, yeah.
I need that.
I'm actually excited about
that. Yeah, me too.
So it premieres, guys, when?
19th of September.
19th of September.
Thursday, September 19th, and two new episodes released each week every Monday and Thursday, which is great.
Yeah.
Is that
it's
going
to be great.
Russell Howard and Chris Whittingham, yeah. Great.
That's
it's going
right.
to be so fun.
Yeah. If you ever find yourself in England, I've got two season tickets to Liverpool.
Have you?
So I would love to bring you along.
I think that's more for me and Sean, not you, Will. Go ahead.
But no, I could probably get another one. But and to be honest, Will will be down in the showers.
Yeah, he was.
Just getting them ready. Just getting the temperature ready.
Yeah, that's anybody want to get ready?
Yeah, exactly. Just putting your elbow in. Yep, that's fine. Oh, that's going to be so good.
Very nice.
Russell,
thank you so much for your time. We're so excited for Goalist.
It's going to be great. Thanks for it. I'm really looking forward to it. Nice to meet you.
You too.
We'll see you there.
Cheers, fellas.
September
19th.
September 19th.
All right, chaps. Have a good day. See you later.
Thanks, Russ.
See you, buddy.
Bye.